Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
The big one at one, brought to you by your local Honda dealer. It's time to get to your local Honda dealer for model year clearance pricing. See your local Honda dealer today. We're Grant and Danny. Final hour of the show kicks off. Our buddy Dan Helley, you see on NFL Network, joins us on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Enjoy watching him on Sunday, spin you around the league, getting you up to speed on your fantasy lineups as well. Dan, good to talk to you. How you been, man?
GP, what's up, boys? Excellent. And yourself?
Doing very well. No complaints. Good, the Washington football team is in first place at 1-2 going into week 4.
That makes me chuckle. Yeah, that was an interesting one, man. It have the lead in the fourth quarter, battling through some of the turnovers and certainly some bright spots, I think, on Sunday, but some other major causes for concern, and things not getting any easier as Washington, a 13-point dog going up against an angry Baltimore Ravens team right now?
Yeah, we saw that last night, Dan. I don't think we learned anything new about Kansas City. They're playing a different game than everyone else. They're really good. Did we learn anything about Baltimore, or is it just kind of what we thought? If they get behind, they're going to scuffle.
Yeah, I think that's it, right? That's kind of been what's been going around today is, Lamar can't play from behind. And certainly the numbers indicate that that's been the case so far. I don't think that's going to be long-term for that team. But they're just – Patrick Mahomes and that offense is just so special. And that's the best they've looked this season, right? They were actually relatively human-looking at times during the first 2 weeks of the season. Baltimore is going to be fine. That's the worst thing in my mind if I'm a Washington fan that could have happened on Monday night was the Ravens playing like they did, because they are going to be coming out on Sunday ready to make some noise.
Yeah, as weird as it sounds, I was kind of hoping for like a big 15-point win or something where they dominated the Chiefs, and then maybe they let down going into Washington a week later, but that will not be the case. Dan, how about this COVID update today we got from the league, where three players test positive for the Titans, another five staffers. They played the Vikings, so Minnesota getting shut down for the moment as well. How are they going to work around the schedules if the Titans and the Steelers can't play this weekend? If the Vikings hopefully can, I guess it's a little less complicated, but what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I was just looking at the schedule for both teams. So the Titans have a bye week scheduled week 7. The Steelers have a bye week scheduled week 8. There's going to be a lot of retooling. I don't know how far down this rabbit hole the league went, in the preseason. I think they were, after week 1 and no positive tests, we're feeling pretty good. This is a big deal, man. There's no way they play this weekend. Zero chance. The Titans facility is shut down until Saturday. They're doing everything remotely. You have three players, five staff, which means likely, coaches or trainers. I don't see how you don't practice for an entire week and then you go out and you play on Sunday. Now, how do they reschedule that game? They reshuffle the bye weeks, but when the two bye weeks are different for the two teams, and then what happens, by the way, now the Titans played the Vikings, and they did the contact tracing, and they found nearly 50 people that were in close proximity, or my guess is had some kind of, you know, hand-to-hand, you're shaking hands after the game, tackling one of the players that tested positive. So the Vikings could very well come up with some positive tests too. So this could affect not just one, but two NFL games. So it's going to be interesting. I don't know how they're going to adjust the schedule, but in my opinion, you need to be, you know, equitable. Every team needs to play 16 games. If you don't play 16 games, then do you make it so everybody only plays 15? There are so many unanswered questions at this point. And, this isn't worst case scenario, but this is going to be a difficult situation for the league.
Dan Helly with us here on Grant and Danny. I'm just going to Seinfeld this thing. What's the deal with Carson Wentz?
Oh, gosh. He looks like a completely different guy that was playing on an MVP level just 2 years ago. And I think what happens with quarterbacks, it's like golfers, right? I'm talking about regular golfers, like if you guys golf or we are, that go out there on the course and you hit a bad drive or you have a couple of bad putts in a row, your confidence wanes. And when you have the Swiss cheese offensive line, when you have Jalen Reagor out, when you have zero weapons on off. Dallas Goedert, by the way, is now going to be out for a little while. He has no help. There's very little help there. I thought last week had the potential to be a breakout game for DeSean Jackson. Obviously did not happen. So I think that he's become a little skittish. I don't think that he trusts those around him, and I think that means that he doesn't trust himself in the process. Those calling for Carson Wentz to be benched, though, I think is absolutely asinine. They're not going to be better with Jalen Hurts quarterback, just not. It's kind of the same thing as Haskins. Like, there's 0 point in my mind right now to benching Haskins. I feel like you have to give him 10 games. Give him the equivalent of essentially a full season. They've said the NFC least the last few years. This is the NFC least, the definition of this season.
It's bad. Sports Info Solutions, by the way, does the on-target throw rate for quarterbacks. And I saw a tweet just came out where Wentz ranks 34th, 66% of the time he's on target. Mitch Trubisky, 35th, who's already been benched. And Dwayne Haskins, dead last, 36th in that category this year. 63%, two of the QBs Dan Helly was just talking about. How about the other one? Trubisky to the bench. Foles starts in Chicago. It felt like this was going to happen eventually, right?
Well, they didn't bring Nick Foles in to be a backup. I think it was just easier to start this season with Trubisky. They won a couple of games. He didn't look great. You bring Foles off. That's what he does. He's the ultimate closer, right? He comes off the bench. But that being said, there is no way that we have seen the last of Mitch Trubisky, because Nick Foles is that guy. He comes in. He plays really well. In my mind, Foles is a little like Fitzmagic, right? For two or three games, he's great, and he's never been able to sustain that over the course of his career. Let's not forget, Nick Foles has essentially failed on three or four teams in the NFL. Yes, he's a Super Bowl MVP, but the majority of his career, he's been a backup quarterback. So, but I think Mitch Trubisky is what we thought he was. He's going to be a backup quarterback, maybe for a long time in the NFL, and he's Chase Daniel. But I don't think that means we've seen the last of him with Chicago. I just think, to me, you look at that division, and I've been waiting and waiting and waiting for Green Bay to fall back down to earth. I'm talking going back to last year. And I'm a huge Matt LaFleur fan, dating back to his days with the Redskins, and got to know him a little bit in L.A. and when he worked with the Titans. Huge fan. I just didn't think they were a 13-win team last year. They won a lot of close games, and a lot of times the next year that turns around. And then they draft a quarterback, which obviously well-documented, did not receive rave reviews around the country. But Aaron Rodgers is playing on a level that we have not seen him play in 3 years. I mean, the guy is they're averaging 41 points per game as an offense. He has 9 touchdowns, no interceptions. And the most impressive thing to me about him this past weekend is that he went out there and spread the ball around to eight different receivers without Davante Adams. And look at what the Saints are without their best receiver in Michael Thomas. They're 0-3 when they don't have him. The Packers without Davante Adams, remember, he missed four games last year. They haven't lost a game. To me, that says about as much about Matt LaFleur as it does about anybody else in that organization. The reason I bring the Packers up is because they are going to walk through that division.
Speaking of a division where no one's walking through, in my mind, is the NFC West, Dan. I mean, the Rams had Buffalo maybe on the ropes there. That was a winnable game, certainly. 49ers are beat up, but they're good. Arizona had a weird bogey this past weekend. But Seattle's 3-0. I don't think they're that great, though, at 3-0, rather. Offensively, they're awesome. Defensively, have given up by far and away the most points in that division. Where are we at on them? The Russell Wilson angle of it is he's playing great football, maybe the MVP through a handful of weeks. But there's some vulnerability there. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, certainly the defense is susceptible in the passing game. They've been relatively sound against the run throughout much of the year. I just think, you know, the let Russ cook hashtag that we have all kind of glommed onto is fascinating to me, because I've always thought that Russ was one of the top five quarterbacks in the NFL, and obviously everybody likes their top five lists every week, and you know you're gonna vacillate between this guy and that guy. I just think the guy's a gamer. I think he's the hardest quarterback in the NFL to tackle when he leaves the pocket, because he's always, his head's on a swivel, he's looking to pass. I'm 100% in on the Seahawks. So yeah, there are some fallacies with the defense, but I think Jamal Adams has been all over the place through three games. I think he makes them a lot better than they have been. It's not the Legion of Boom. let's not kid ourselves. But this is a really good football team, and the division's insane, because I think the Rams, they should have won that game. That was a bad PI call. The Cardinals are okay. You know, the Cardinals are still, in my mind, an 8-8 football team. But what they do have is they have a young quarterback who is electric, and they have playmakers on the offensive side of the ball, and the defense vastly improved. The most impressive team to me, considering what they've gone through, is the 49ers. As much as I love Sean McVay, again, dating back to his days with the Redskins, Kyle Shanahan's the best football coach in the NFL right now. What they have done and what they put together, and make no mistake about it, Kyle Shanahan put that roster together. John Lynch is the general manager, but Kyle Shanahan put that roster together. And the injuries that they have overcome, and they're going to be getting guys back. You know, yes, they lost Bosa and Solomon Thomas for the year with torn ACLs, but they're going to be getting Kittle and some of these dudes back. And to do what they have done so far, they're if they get healthy, you know, fully healthy by midseason, outside of the guys that are, you know, done for the year, that's a scary football team. And that's, in my mind, that's the best division in football.
At Dan Helly on Twitter. We should do it again soon, man. Love talking ball with you. Thanks for hopping on.
Always, Danny GP. Thanks for having me, guys.
Good talk to you.
Pleasure. Local guy, done well. Dan Helly, who's been a stud nationally now for years. You're listening to 106.7 The Fan. Next, we got to give out our quarterbacking awards for week 3. Gold, silver, bronze medals, and who was our Jag of the Week at the quarterback position? We'll do it next on The Fan. Football's back. You can play against me and make your picks, which could be worth $10,000 with the Rocket Mortgage 2020 Pro Football Pick'em. Sign up today at radio.com/picks and just pick the winner of each week's games. Pretty simple. No point spreads, no lineups, totally free to enter. Pick the most games right throughout the season. You could win $10,000. It's the Rocket Mortgage 2020 Pro Football Pick'em. Sign up now at radio.com/picks. Welcome back, Grant and Danny. Every week on Tuesday, we give out our quarterbacking awards from the week that was. So let's go in order here, Danny. Gold, silver, bronze medals, and then we'll give out our Jag of the Week, which goes to the, not the worst, but the most pedestrian replacement-level quarterbacking performance there was. Who gets your gold medal?
He spent a lot of time up at the top here. He's at the top of pretty much everybody's MVP rankings this week. How about 315 yards, 5 touchdowns, a 2-point conversion, plus 6 rushes for 22 yards? Russell Wilson, 315 and 5 in another win, a shootout win, where he had to do every one of those things to beat the Dallas Cowboys. Russell Wilson, another piece of gold on the mantle.
Pat Mahomes gets the gold medal for his performance last night. This was the most anticipated game of the week. Had to wait an extra day to take the field against the Baltimore Ravens, and all he did was go out and complete 31 of 42 attempts, slinging the ball downfield to all his receivers, using all his weapons, four touchdowns, turnover free, rushed for another touchdown to open the game. Pat Mahomes, my gold medal. I'll give the silver to Russell Wilson. Hard to argue with five touchdowns and no picks, overcoming four sacks at a rating over 130. Continues to be immensely accurate, 27 of 40 for those 315 you talked about. He gets my silver medal.
Just flipped each other right there. Pat Mahomes, silver medalist. He almost got the gold for me. Probably deserves it, to be honest with you. I just kind of made a coin toss. And, you know, Pat Mahomes did it, frankly, against the better defense. So maybe he should have gotten the gold medal award there from your pal. But he was sensational last night. He's playing a different game. Some of the high-level stuff that he was doing. I mean, he knew a blitz was coming on that double-move touchdown to Mecole Hardman deep down the field where they caught his former teammate on a double move. He didn't care. He knew the guy was going to be unblocked. He just backed up 27 yards and off his back foot threw a ball that two people alive could do, pretty much him and Aaron Rodgers. That's the list. Just absolutely incredible how good that dude is. That's my silver medalist. I'll give you my bronze medal. Josh Allen, another week in the top three for bronze medallion Josh Allen. Did have an interception in that game, which helped the Rams come back in it, but 3-11, four touchdowns. And also had a rushing touchdown in the game. All three of our guys at the top of the list, by the way, accounted for five offensive touchdowns, just to tell you how this game has changed. But Allen was sensational early and did enough late to help the Bills stave off the Los Angeles Rams.
Yeah, Allen gets my bronze medal as well with his banner outing, 24 of 33 for 311, to go with the four touches, the one pick that you talked about, and obviously leads the team down the field for the game-winning drive. The big throw he made to Cole Beasley on 3rd and 22 was one of the better arm talent throws of the weekend, just kind of forcing a ball in between a couple of defenders. Pretty impressive. He's been great all year. I was talking to a talent evaluator in football yesterday, and we were talking about Dwayne Haskins, and they were saying basically he is a pocket passer, and so his lack of accuracy is going to be more troubling than other guys, like Lamar Jackson as an example. And there are people who will pick nits and say he's an accurate passer and he's a better passer and all these things. But one of the knocks on him early on, and you see it last night and you see it from time to time, is that he can struggle with his accuracy when throwing down the field. It just doesn't matter as much for a guy like that because you've got other ways to beat teams. Josh Allen the same way. One of the reasons I loved him coming out of Wyoming was he was super athletic. He could run around. If you just watched the Senior Bowl, you knew this guy is going to be one of the best athletes on the field. So you don't have to necessarily be immensely accurate if you've got other clubs in the bag, if you're a dual threat, if you're Cam Newton, if you're Josh Allen, if you're Russell Wilson. Not that he's not accurate, but my point is you could get by. Haskins is not those types of guys. He wants to stand in the pocket and make throws, and that can make it somewhat difficult. But you see Allen getting out of the pocket, being able to reset. It's not necessarily that accuracy, which is hard to improve, has changed a ton. He's still going to miss some throws, but he's going to make so many plays along the way that he can still be an unbelievable player for the Buffalo Bills, and he's in the top five, I would think, right now in MVP race.
Without question.
Sweepstakes.
Without question.
The way that he's playing, he's been just marvelous. All right, so those are our gold, silver, and bronze medalists at the quarterback position. A couple of other also receiving votes items here. Not that he was particularly splendid, but just based on storylines. Nick Mullins comes off the bench for the Niners against the Giants and throws for 343 yards. Only Dak Prescott and Pat Mahomes had more yards this past week. Justin Herbert goes for 330 in a five-point loss to Carolina. Second time in as many weeks he eclipsed 300 yards as a starter. And I would throw Joe Burrow, speaking of the kids, into that mix. Burrow, 312 and two touchdowns without any picks, rating over 100. His team probably deserved a win in Philadelphia. They tied. He's having to, you know, fight six, seven fights at once trying to get a win for the Bengals. But you can see that Joe Burrow's the real deal. So those are some of the other guys around football deserving of some attention. All right, give me your Jag of the week. I'm looking for the most average pedestrian replacement level performance. Not necessarily terrible, but who was the jaggiest Jag of all the Jags?
238 yards, a touchdown, and an interception, and one rush attempt for -1 yard. He played in the game. He was there. He completed it, got a uniform on, got a post-game snack, maybe some Gatorade. Congratulations to Matt Ryan. You are my Jag of the week. Not too bad, but not particularly good either. Thanks, Matt.
I like that one a lot. Second half, if he makes one or two more throws.
Just a play.
They're up 26-10 and lose that game. It just took one more. That's all they needed. Yep. Not even a touchdown. Just a big gain at some point to move the sticks. Couldn't do it. My Jag of the week is a Jag in real life, if he's anything. How about Jeff Driskel, the quarterback for the Denver Broncos? They lost 28-10 to the Bucs. He was 17 of 30 for 176 yards, one touchdown, one interception, and a 71 rating. Have you ever heard a Jaguar stat line? I don't even look at names when I do this, by the way. I don't know how you do it. I pull up all the numbers from the week, and then I just look for the Jaggiest line. And 17 of 30 for 176, 1-1 with a 71 rating is the epitome of a Jag outing. So Jeff Driskel, yeah, come on down.
That fits the bill right there. That's perfect. And he is, but here's the thing. I try not to pick on guys that shouldn't be starting NFL games, but it does fit. I mean, he's such a Jag.
Why wears the white uniform? All we're doing is saying who had the Jaggiest performance of the week. It could be Pat Mahomes next week. It could be anybody.
This is true.
I mean,
this is true.
All they're doing is just going out there playing replacement level football. I wanted to go with there were some other guys I considered, but like Sam Darnold, who threw three picks. That's bad. That's bad. The line for Daniel Jones was very Jaggy, but he played really bad. So you can't give him Jag. He would have to improve to be a Jag.
Exactly.
I considered Phil Rivers. 17 of 21 for 217 and 1 for a second straight week, but he was a little bit more accurate than Jag status, I suppose. But
I think he could have taken a knee the entire game, by the way, and they still would have won because of a couple defensive touchdowns.
Definitely, yeah. Some of the passing totals this week, though. Dak goes for 472. Pat Mahomes, 385. Nick Mullins, 343. Justin Herbert, 330. Jared Goff, 321. Tannehill, 321. Russell, 315. Burrow, 312. Allen, 311. All over triple digits this week in the NFL. We're just trying to get to 270 here in D.C., man.
We'd like to get a little I-270. By the way, three elder statesmen were all hyper-efficient. How about nine touchdowns and no picks between them? Two in the same game. Rodgers, Brady, Breeze. Not world-beating. Not incredible. Not like, oh, my God, transcendent like we've seen them maybe in the past. But all three quietly excellent and very efficient in two wins and a loss there.
Grant and Danny, biggest win and worst loss from week three. We'll get into that next on Grant and Danny. I was watching the Lightning celebrate their Stanley Cup win last night, culminating all the NHL action in the bubble, and congratulations to the National Hockey League for pulling off an amazing several weeks of hockey for all of us to watch. But it reminded me of the night the Caps won the Cup out in Vegas a couple of years ago now, and a night we'll have forever, Danny, as
that's right.
When the drought broke here in Washington, D.C., just an emotional evening. I mean, if your eyes were dry, we don't have much in common. I mean, it was an amazing night for the Caps, but the Lightning in so many ways are similar. I mean, they had been biting at the apple for a while. This is how I believe you build and what you should do. You know, people get mad when teams lose in the playoffs. They use words like choking. One team gets to win, it's really, really hard to do. My philosophy, if I'm a team builder, is to give myself, as I call it, bites at the apple, opportunities to just stay relevant. I need to build a playoff roster every year. I think Mike Rizzo kind of subscribes to this. You hear him talking about it. My job is to build a 90-win roster every year. And that'll generally get you into the playoffs, and you see what happens from there with the luck of the draw, particularly in hockey. But I think you could say this about a lot of sports. That's my job. You know, if I'm an executive, if I'm putting together a roster, I'm building a 10-win playoff team every year in football. I'm building a hockey team that's going to get to the postseason. And the Lightning in 2015 lost in the Stanley Cup Final. 2016, lost in Game 7 of the Conference Finals. 2017, didn't make the playoffs, rebooted. 2018, lost in Game 7 of the Conference Finals, again. 2019, they got swept by the Blue Jackets. And this is despite, over the years, like the Caps, being one of the best teams in the regular season.
I mean,
everyone's saying, oh, they're not built for the playoffs, they can't win in the playoffs. Well, finally,
everybody would pick them every year. Yeah, they were always the expert pick, right? Because on paper, they were always so good.
Bubble champion, cup champion, whatever you want to call them. They did it. And the story of their head coach is just awesome, John Cooper. So I didn't know all of these details, but apparently he played lacrosse in college. He worked on Wall Street. He became a lawyer when he was 32 years old, so my age. He started coaching high school hockey as a favor to a judge. And now 20 years later,
like a
he's
sitcom.
A Stanley Cup champion. Isn't that Gordon Bombay style? That's like
I wouldn't know.
Mr. Duckworth made him go coach the D5 team. That's John Cooper, and then he goes on and wins the Stanley Cup. But anyway,
that is crazy.
I was just watching that last night and thinking about the Caps trying to localize this thing, and it always brings me back to when Ovi got to skate around with the Stanley Cup.
And it should. I mean, the thing that I said about that at the time, obviously it was just so joyous for everybody that followed them all the way back into the 70s. But for me, who grew up going to the Capital Center in Landover and watching them find a way to lose three games to one series and all the heartbreak and everything else. But really it was about DC sports. They released that pressure valve where every time an opponent would score in any meaningful game, everybody was like me. I'd sit there going, that's it. We're losing. Fire everyone. This sucks. Blah. Here come the Penguins fans or whoever. And they finally released that pressure valve where you don't have that gasp of horror the first time somebody leads off an inning with a base hit against the Nationals, you know, in a game number two in the postseason. That fear, that terror all went away because they released the pressure valve. They deserve so much credit for that, man. And it was so great.
All right, best win, worst loss of week three. Let's get into that here. I'm going to start with worst losses. We can go back and forth here, rapid fire, volley over the net. I'm going to say Dan Quinn and the Falcons. A week ago, it was Dallas with that weird onside kick coming back from down an insurmountable deficit. This past week, they're up 26-10, and they get outscored 20-0 in the fourth quarter with Foles coming off the bench. Chicago's 3-0, Atlanta's 0-3, and I just can't imagine Quinn has much time left.
That's a good one. I mean, just the way they lost it was very Falconsy, very on brand. To me, the worst loss of the weekend is the Arizona Cardinals. What do you want to be? Are you? Oh, it's the Cardinals. Are you in the, like, you know how Eric Bickle has categories of teams that he'll never take seriously? The Cardinals are one of them. That's why. You can't do that. You cannot do that. You cannot lose to a team that's going to probably finish in last place in that division at home. That was a bad loss for the Arizona Cardinals. Detroit's not terrible. They're not going to be excruciatingly bad. And, you know, they're not the Jets. But at the same time, for a team that wants to take the next step, that wants to be a division winner, that has the chance to be, honestly, in a wide-open NFC West, that loss is going to bite them when they get into the teeth of their division schedule, having to play the Rams, having to play Seattle, et cetera. That one's going to sting.
Another terrible loss. The Rams, 32. The Bills, 35. Not because L.A., you know, lost to a team they should have beaten. I mean, they came back from down 25 to take a lead. Mm-hmm. It was an amazing, furious comeback. It's just how they lost. It was a terrible beat. It was, I thought, a bad call on a pass interference. They deserved to win that football game. But let's take that play out of it. They allowed conversions on third and 22, like a 23 or 24-yard gain. And then there was another third and 20-plus where over the span of two plays, because of the pass interference, the Bills moved the chains. So if you look at the percentage chance to win throughout that final drive, I think it was sitting probably at 95%+ a couple of times, and they lost partially because of the call. They'll be okay. They're 2-1. The Bills are 3-0. But that's a bad, bad loss.
Good one. In terms of other bad losses, and it's not bad because of the opponent, right? Because Kansas City's the best team in the NFL. We now know that. But how it happened to Baltimore. Again, they're a special teams touchdown away from losing that 34-13. That was not a good showing for them. They did not look ready for primetime. When it's all 1 o'clock on Sunday and they get the Browns or they get some lesser opponent, they're bullies and they run roughshod over them. They went up against Kansas City with a chance to prove some things. Another marquee opponent. I think they're 0-3 in this sort of recent Lamar Jackson era against the Chiefs, if memory serves. But the way that it happened to me didn't look real good if you're a Ravens fan.
All right, good wins. I'll stay in that same game. How could you not say the Chiefs?
Yeah.
They dominated a team that most people had number one in the NFL in power rankings coming into the week. They'll now be number one. The Packers, 37-30 shootout
That's
over
one.
The Saints. Mm-hmm. They didn't have Davante Adams. The Packers have scored 43, 42, and 37 points, and Aaron Rodgers looks as good as he has in the last 10 years. Seattle, I thought, was going to beat Dallas. The fact that they did beat them 38-31 isn't that surprising to me. The reason I say that was a really high-end quality win, though, could have easily been 45-31 if not for the fluky dumb play from DK Metcalf at the goal line. But that offense is just cooking, man.
Yes,
to almost score 50 points. I mean, they had two quarters with double-digit points. They scored in every one of the four quarters. The Seahawks right now are – they're just a juggernaut with the football. I don't know how anyone's going to slow that offense down.
So back to Green Bay really quick. Both teams are without their head and shoulders number one receiving option. Right, Devontae Adams and Michael Thomas, respectively. First-round fantasy draft picks, both of those guys, superstars. And I know the score was only a one-touchdown game, but you could see the offenses were dramatically different, right? Green Bay still had its entire playbook. New Orleans was dump it to Alvin Kamara, who was incredible in this game, by the way. Had one of the great touchdowns I've seen in recent memory. And everything was close to line of scrimmage and sort of gimmicked up. Green Bay is like, go ahead, Maestro. Go ahead, Aaron Rodgers. Roll out and flick it downfield, you know, 50 yards, pretty much every other play. It just looked different in terms of the operation, but I agree with you. That's a good road win when both teams are without their number one option. Here's another good win, and how it happened, I think, matters just as much to me. The Patriots kicked the snot out of the Raiders, 36-20. The Raiders are fine. There's nothing terrible or really that great about them. I think offensively they're very capable. Just that vice-like New England defense. They won without Cam Newton having to do a, you know, 300-yard, 70-yard rushing, two goal line carries type thing. They did it in a very New England next man up kind of way. That they were never threatened in that ball game. It was a domination fest from start to finish, putting themselves in position to stay right with Buffalo in that division.
I'll throw one more out there. The Titans stayed unbeaten at 3-0, and we found out today that they have three positive COVID cases on the field and another five in the organization, so eight total. They're not going to play the Steelers this weekend. That hasn't been made official, but seems like common sense as they have been shut down. Their operation will be closed through Saturday. But they're 3-0. They beat the Vikings 31-30. Minnesota's defense can be had by you, me, Thommy, Darn, and about seven people that we pull off the street. But yep. They were down 24-12 and then 30-25 late in the fourth quarter, and they kept scoring to take leads in a back-and-forth game. Dalvin Cook ran for 181. Kirk Cousins threw three touchdowns, 250 yards. And the Vikings averaged 7.5 yards per play and went for 460 and still lost. Because the Titans, think about this team doing that over the last couple of years. It's been Derrick Henry or nothing. Well, Ryan Tannehill threw for 320. They got 100 yards from Raymond, another 70 from Davis, another 60 from Smith, another 40 from Humphreys. They spread the Vikings out and threw it. And I think anybody who wants to will be able to. But that was a big, big win for Tennessee coming back and that's getting some late field goals. By the way, in that game in the fourth quarter, with 6:31 left, Steven Gostkowski hit a 54-yarder. And then with 1:44 left, he hit a 55-yarder. So they went from down 30-25 to 31-30 winners on those two field goals. That's the same dummy who missed all the field goals in week one that
yeah,
everybody wanted
Chuck
to cut.
Knobloch in week one, yeah.
In this game, he hit
he
a
great.
Total. I think he was 6-for-6 with those two 50-yard field goals. The biggest reason why they won. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan, will set the table for one of the busiest Tuesdays in sports in a while, next on GND. The end of 2019, there were about 95,000 sports bars in the United States. By the end of 2020, there is expected to be only 66,000 due to pandemic-fueled closures. The Athletic's Bill O'Shea has reported on this. About 29,000 sports bars going to be lost during this pandemic. That is a punch to your boy's gut. And it's a decent-sized gut because of all my time spent in sports bars.
I know there's a cyclical nature there. Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. I mean, I hate to be glib about it. I don't mean to be dismissive. There are countless businesses just like that that require butts in seats, booze being poured, you know, appies being served, et cetera, for you to want to come with camaraderie and watch whatever it is on television. And I don't know how they're surviving this. I really don't. It stinks, man.
Well, speaking of stinks, Thursday Night Football is going to be awful. The Broncos are playing the Jets. And you think, well, the Broncos will beat the Jets for sure. Why not? They're going to start Brett Rypien on Thursday night. I guess Jeff Driskel is not going to be healthy enough to go.
Oh, no.
So it is week four of the season. And the Broncos are on their third quarterback. Normally, you and I always talk about third quarterbacks. It's like December. It's a lost year. You've lost a couple of guys. You're not very good. And as we say, the plane has hit the mountain. Nothing else matters when you get to your third quarterback. Well, they lose Drew Lock in week two. They lose Driscoll, I guess, after week three. He's not going to be playing. And Brett Rypien is going to be starting for them on Thursday Night Football against the New York Jets. I hesitate to say that the Jets are going to win the game, but maybe this is the week to take them in Survivor and get them out of the way. What do you think?
Well, if there were 32 weeks, maybe you'd have to. I'm still going to probably avoid taking the New York Jets under any circumstances. But if it weren't for ties, and we already have one in week three, again, there should be no ties. Everyone should feel this way. You and I are the minority that we hate ties so much. People are fine with ties. I'll never understand that. You and I will just continue to be space aliens, I guess, in the minds of these folks. But I can't stand ties so much. But you would think, in general, just this applies, that's a somebody has to win it game. Somebody's got to win that game, right?
I'd imagine, yeah.
You would think?
Maybe they just won't. Maybe they'll say, let's not play this one, actually,
we shouldn't
guys.
Do this. This is not good.
Nobody needs to see this. At least it's nationally televised in prime time with everyone on short rest for Thursday Night Football. How about this for the Jets, though? If you can't win this game, just pack it up and go home.
Yeah.
If you can't beat a bad Broncos team with their third quarterback who has 2 days to prepare to start, who is not an NFL quarterback by all accounts, maybe he comes out and lights it up and we have a different opinion of him. But if you can't win this game, then you're picking you're going 0-16. This is it. This is your golden opportunity now to get a win, and for you get actually 10 days. You get a little reprieve here, a week and a half, everyone to feel like the sky might not be falling. Yesterday, some news out of the NBA we have not yet hit as we get to the leftovers and all the best of the rest. Doc Rivers out in L.A., head coach of the Clippers, no more. What'd you think of this move?
So this is one of those things I'm torn about. That 3-1 collapse with all the talent in the world has to fall at the feet of somebody. And it just so happens to be the guy that got them out of laughingstock and helped build a culture to get them to that point where the expectations were that high. It's one of those things, man, where I could absolutely see it either way, where it's like, man, pretty unforgiving, pretty cold, pretty stone-hearted to just move on from the guy that got you there. But at the same time, it's inexcusable to lose to a team that's probably a year away from being great, who just got the doors blown off in 5 games against the team that you should have been competing against to go to the NBA Finals. So I know that's an answer I answered both ways, but I was pretty surprised, frankly, that they did it as swiftly and harshly as they did.
I was stunned. You better do better. You know, I know people get bothered when good coaches lose their job with high expectations. I think of Dusty Baker here. We've seen like John Farrell, some guys like that in the past in Boston. But you got to do better. You can't just do different. You know, you can't have someone that's not as qualified. A baseball playoff starting at 2 o'clock today. Speaking of Dusty Baker, the 6-seed Astros, the 3-seed Twins, America is going to be pulling for Minnesota.
Let's go, Minnesota.
Zach Greinke and Kenta Maeda. Number 7, Chicago White Sox. Number 2, A's at 3 o'clock on ESPN. Lucas Giolito and Jesus Luzardo, two former Nationals stud prospects pitching in
the
that
Syracuse
game.
Syracuse Sky Chief Bowl.
The Blue Jays and the Rays, 8-1 at 5 o'clock. Hyunjin Ryu in year one in Toronto, the Cy Young runner-up in 2019 to Jacob deGrom in the NL against Blake Snell, who won the Cy Young Award in 2018. And the final game of the day, 5th-seeded Yankees, 1st-seeded Indians, Garrett Cole and Shane Bieber. $324 million spent on Cole for days like today.
Yeah,
meanwhile, he takes on the runaway favorite for the Cy Young Award in the American League.
Yeah, Shane Bieber was incredible this year. He basically was on Pitching Ninja every 5 days because his starts were that good with his nasty, nasty stuff. He was unbelievable this season. But this is cool. Wall-to-wall baseball, and then tomorrow we do it all over again, right? With the Braves up there, Dodgers, Brewers, Cubs, Marlins, San Diego, and St. Louis. It's fun, man. I like this.
Actually, we're doubling up because tomorrow game two in all these series will be played. Plus, you'll have the National League. So you'll have the 8 games. It's, by the way, for people that haven't tracked this, it's really cool. Best of 3 series, all 3 games hosted by the higher seed, no travel, back-to-back-to-back days.
I love that, by the way. I think you need to reward teams in general with stuff like this for a 162-game season. This short season, we're going to do it that way, but I think you need to figure out a way to, hey, you won 105 games, you get one more home game in the first round. I never liked that, so I like this format.
Today is tough as a Nats fan, watching all these teams play. Now, I will say that the World Series ring that the Nationals have in their mantles, it makes it all worth it. But 16 teams make it, and they're not one of them. Kind of tough. Big story of the day, the Titans have closed their facility. The Vikings have been shut down for the moment with positive COVID tests. three players with the Titans who played the Vikings this week. Chad's got more coming up next right here on 106.7 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.